and welcome to another episode of the Retail Unpacked podcast from Retail Gazette, the podcast that delves into the many nuanced and fascinating areas of the retail industry. And hopefully you'll learn a little something along the way as well. Today we are talking about EV charging. Now I know what you're thinking, what's that got to do with retail? Well, actually, we're talking about the benefits to landowners of hosting EV charging in their retail parks, their parades of shops, basically anywhere where you have retailers in your ecosystem. And the point of this conversation is about how actually that can be a really transformative thing. It can affect who shops in those locations. It can affect whether you are a, you know, passing fancy destination or whether you are a set destination for the purpose of charging. Because guess what? While that car is charging, people have time on their hands and they want to spend it in these retail outlets. So, to really get into this podcast subject, I have three incredible guests with me today. I'm going to ask all three to introduce themselves in just a second, and then we will get into the discussion. Hope you enjoy.
Hello, I'm Elizabeth Warren. I'm the Director of Public Charging at Mayor. I've got 5 years experience in the EV industry and another 10 years in renewables before that.
Hi, my name's Tim. I'm the Head of Sales for Mayor Charging in the UK. I've been in the industry now for coming up about 8 years. Prior to that, a lot of industry experience within the motor trade, including being a qualified mechanic.
Hello, my name is Chantal Baudouin. I am Head of ESG at Knight Frank Investment Management, and I've been in ESG for the past 20 years and in real estate sustainability, I would say now for 10 years.
So let's kick off with the macro picture here then. We're talking about EV charging and the massive impact that it can have. So why is EV infrastructure so critical for improving air quality and future-proofing urban environments?
Okay, so 29% of the UK's emissions are from the transport sector. That's more than energy production and heavy industry. At the moment, we've got about 30 million fossil fuel cars on the road. And right now, 1.5 million BEVs, that's battery electric vehicles. So we've got quite a long way to go to convert those cars to a sustainable source of energy. Building infrastructure now means that we can ease the transition as those cars move over from their normal ICE petrol station vehicles into charging on the EV network. If we've put the infrastructure in place, there's the confidence that you can make that transition and that move will be easy to do. As we move towards 2030 and the ban on ICE car sales, there's going to be even more pressure to do that and more pressure to do it quite quickly for many of the reasons that we'll talk about later on, I'm sure, in the podcast. And this means that the retail sector is in a fantastic position to really drive the future towards improving air quality and become a really vital link in the use of the network of EV chargers across the UK.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to hear you say that because it is like the clock is ticking and those who get on board now, yeah, are going to be, I mean, you know, if you know what your favourite petrol station is, don't you? You know what I mean? So I feel like getting that ingrained in people's heads early is huge.
Absolutely. And we see that with our own sites, that when somebody's got used to going to an EV charging location, they'll continue to go back there. So you want to become that first mover. There are other reasons as well why you maybe want to get in there in terms of the grid, which we'll come on to a little bit later. But yeah, the sooner the better, the sooner that we can build that confidence that the network is there and it's usable and ideally in a location that the customers want to go to. Absolutely vital. And the retail sector is ideal for this solution, I'd mm-hmm. say. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. And so a lot of ESG initiatives can often feel maybe slightly box-ticky, right? So what makes EV charging different to that? And particularly, how does it align with environmental impact, with commercial opportunity? How do those two things kind of come together?
So over the years, we've seen ESG targets become what was previously a bit of a nice to have to a must have. The scoring covers things like resources, emissions reduction, and innovation. All three of those are covered by EV infrastructure. And in addition, it's going to bring in revenue, rental revenue, and increase footfall to the site. So it's a kind of perfect marriage between providing a sustainable option, helping to green up transport, and also bring in additional revenue and potentially bring in people that wouldn't normally go to these locations, who think instead of, you know, going to your petrol station, actually, I can go and charge my car at this retail park and I can pick up the things that I need for the kids, or I can go and have a coffee, or I can get my summer and my winter clothing. You know, there's quite a lot that can be done. So they're kind of in a unique position.
Yeah, it's a perfect gateway to pulling people to your site. Can I ask, how long does it, you know, is there an average time it takes to charge an EV?
Depends completely on the EV you're driving, the state of charge of the battery. Mm-hmm. So what percentage, if you're quite a low percentage, you'll find it charges extremely quickly. If your battery's warm, it'll be extremely quickly. But looking from about 20 to 80%, and I'm looking at Tim here, who is our car expert,
yeah,
about 20 to 80% on a standard EV, family EV car, you're looking about 25 to 30 minutes maximum.
I would say so. And I think there's a big difference in, as you say, the car. And I think we need to also look at the different generations now. We're seeing a much, much faster charging is becoming more standard across all of the vehicles. Most cars now are somewhere between 100 to 150 kilowatt in terms of their DC maximum capacity. Exactly as Liz said, that gets hit when your battery's warm and it's sort of sub 10%. And then that will sort of taper off a bit, probably sit between 60 to 80 kilowatts charging, and then will drop down. You've then got sort of the more premium cars in the market, the Porsche Taycan, typically most of the Tesla brand, that can charge in the sort of 200s, even pushing 300s. So it really does depend on the vehicle. But for this sort of environment, it fits perfectly. 20 minutes, 40 minutes, it's enough time to either do, you know, a quick look around the shops, whether that's because you're charging or whether it's I need to go to the shops, I'll charge whilst I'm there. So we also find that this is something you become quite used to quite quickly. I think it's a very prominent question when you move into EV charge, you know, driving an EV, sorry. Once you own one, it then just becomes a, do I need to charge? Or, oh, look, I can charge. And I think you just get used to that mentality.
Yeah. As you say, that might be an average weekly shop time or something. So actually combining those two things makes absolutely perfect sense and just becomes part of your routine.
Yeah, exactly that. Fantastic. You change your mindset and how you feel.
Yeah. How does investing in EV infrastructure directly influence the value of commercial real estate assets? And are we seeing a shift in how landlords are considering the ROI of that?
The value of a property is driven in two ways. First, in terms of the income that it's generating. So EV has an annual bay rental, and that is then taken into account into the evaluation of a property. And then you have the tenancy and what kind of rent you can get from the tenants, the retailers at the site. And I would say that in this case, EV attracts retailers and keeps them happy and on board. So indirect and directly influences the value of the property and the tenants that are on site.
I'm really interested in, say you're thinking from the perspective of a landlord, I think there may be a misconception possibly about what kind of physical requirements are needed in order to install EV charging. So, you know, we've seen kind of giant mega sites that look like gas stations where 10 cars can charge at once or something. But can you also actually take advantage of EV charging at a much smaller, you know, scale, with, say, you have a coffee shop and two shops, a small parade? Is that prime there as well?
Yeah, we're definitely seeing a tailoring of the number of bays, depending on the site, depending on the parking currently available. But to give, and this is something I've learned as well, in terms of the parking spaces required, and a landlord thinks about the number of bays that they have and how much the EV will take from that lot. So for one bay, we're talking about 2 to 3 parking bays. So one EV to three. That will include the substation and the ability for disabled individuals to have access as well. So those are the types of ratios that we're thinking of. But we can range, we're thinking about, we have areas that we have 4 bays up to 6 bays. Those are the average in retail outlets that we're planning at the moment.
Fantastic. So it really can just shift and be malleable to what space you have available, essentially. So long as you obviously have somewhere for people to park, you can pretty much get something good in there. So we talked a little bit about the kind of habit forming nature of EV charging and what it can do for businesses. So I want to delve a bit more into how it's starting to influence where and when people choose to shop, right? So how can a landlord take advantage of that and actually start to capitalize on that behavioral shift? What does that look like practically?
I think it's a really good question, and it's one that we're being asked regularly, is how does this work? How can I make something of this? We, through the data that we have, and again, even looking at my experience, I'm looking at Liz as well next to me, who I know can vouch for the same. What we see is this building from when we put a charger in to its sort of peak use, as it were. So there's this undeniable trend that once you put a charger in, you will see more and more people come to it. If you can get a nice, reliable, decent charge, when I say a decent charge, again, this sort of goes back to the earlier question, making sure you're aligning your charge time with your dwell time. If you've got something like a large supermarket, you want it to be quick, but not too fast. If you're simply a coffee shop, you want as fast as possible, because the likelihood is you're going to grab a drink, maybe do an email, and then you're going to leave. So it's aligning that correctly. So there's a discussion to be had with any landlords. I mean, the simple answer is there's always something for you. The right answer is let's look at where you're situated, what your typical dwell time is. You've got your data on your customers and your visitors, and we can work with you in terms of saying, okay, what's the right setup for you? How many bays do you need? Let's not overcrowd it. We're not in the market to say, great, you've got 20 bays, we'll make them all electrified. Mm-hmm. And then suddenly people driving petrol and diesel cars don't know where to go anymore. It's about building it correctly from the start and then growing it as that demand increases. So there's lots to pick at there. And it all really comes down to having that initial conversation to understand what their site does, how it operates, and who they see.
Mm. And is there, this is a leading question, yeah, but is there kind of an ideal, you know, landlord or situation that you have in mind when looking for people to work with? Or actually, do you flex entirely depending on that need?
The answer is yes, there is an ideal. The ideal would be somewhere where there is lots for a driver to do, because what we need to accept here, you know, the fuel station model is, I'm going A to B, but I need to go via D because I haven't got enough fuel to get where I need to go. So I need to stop via this. Actually, what you realize is quite an inconvenient method, although relatively quick, because if the fuel station's empty and you can pay at your pump, you're there maybe 2 minutes. With EV charging, best will in the world, you're still likely going to be 5 to 10 minutes. So it is a longer dwell time, typically maybe 20 minutes. So the ideal situation would be near a motorway, near an A road within the UK, lots of passing traffic, so we can pick people up as they're going on their journey, but also lots for that driver to do. Amenities, things like bathrooms are important, coffee shops important, good high street shops that we all need to go in, you know, the likes of, I don't know if I can name them, but sort of pharmacies and supermarket style would be great. Mm-hmm. With that said, there's always something that we can do. Going back to one of the earlier questions in terms of space, if it's a small location, don't have a lot of parking, we can look at doing a slightly smaller installation, maybe one charger servicing 2 bays on what's known as an LV connection. So we don't need as much effectively infrastructure around that charger so that we're not using up as much space on site. What I will say to that is our data shows that drivers typically, irrespective of the time they're looking to stop, whether it's a planned stop or a convenient stop, they are still looking for 100, 150 kilowatt, 200 kilowatt upwards. So we're typically putting that in because that's what's drawing drivers. They would rather have, it's going to take me 5 minutes to charge, but I want 10 minutes on site, rather than I need 5 minutes on site, but it's going to take me 15. Mm. So that's the kind of mentality behind that.
Yeah, it's psychological, isn't it? You know, like you almost end up spending more time somewhere when you don't feel locked to it.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
That's really interesting. And of course, one thing that our listeners are going to be very interested in is Knight Frank's journey here. It's always so fascinating to hear someone who's actually been on the journey, right? So I wanted to ask what that journey looked like and what did you learn through the tendering and implementation process?
Yeah, so we went out to tender and looked at all of our landlord sites, and the first step that we learned is, where do we control our parking and what kind of restrictions do we have currently in place? And then it was about finding the right partner, and that was took over a year in terms of the journey to selecting Mayor, because there was a lot of interactions first for us to know what are the elements that are important to us, and that from an ESG perspective was the sourcing of the energy, making sure that it's 100% renewable. And Mayor's ownership by Starcraft was a key element of that. And then there's the supply chain, the actual ESG of the supply chain, of how are they being made and where, and the ethical elements behind making the EV bays. And so there was some back and forth in terms of obtaining documentation and elements to make us aware of those different considerations. And then obviously there's the revenue. So bluntly, what is the income per bay that can be offered? And then finally, from a real estate ownership perspective, what is the flexibility around termination? Because we have to think about, we're currently in ownership, but who's going to be the next owner? Is there flexibility, and what kind of termination can we adopt, or flexibility around moving the bays? And that has had to be really ironed out together as the partnership grew. And I guess those legalities of agreement for lease and templates on different legal agreements, those were the kind of nitty-gritty that had to be ironed out in that cycle to get us ready to implementation. Mm-hmm.
Those are considerations that I hadn't even thought about. I mean, the actual production of the units that are going to, you know, go on your property is a really interesting thing. And I guess that you were happy with the results that you found out there.
Definitely. In terms of Mayor are adopting best-in-class practices, and I think we were able to see that with the documentation, and the partnership that took place from it was from the due diligence that took place in that setting up of that partnership.
Mm-hmm. And then obviously that's only the start of the relationship, isn't it, really? You know, you say that took a year, but actually that's just to get going, you know, and to kind of, you know, shake hands and know that you're going to be working together. Then comes the really interesting bit. But what I'm wondering is, and you mentioned a few key things there, but I'm wondering if there's anything else that you can bring out for us, because I know it'll be really interesting for our audience. What should retailers and landlords look for in a partner to, you know, partner with, for lack of a better word, like Mayor? And what makes the difference between a box in the ground and a meaningful long-term asset?
I think the differentiator between a box in the ground, as you mentioned, is the quality of the EV, the charging capacity. We wanted to get the maximum so that the charging time would be reduced. And then you have the end user experience. So how is the payment system? What is the cost to the end user? What is, I guess, the experience of the end user on that charging experience is another element that will make that charging bay successful. And the last thing is you want reliability in terms of uptime and making sure that if there's a fault or an issue with the EV, there's some repairs and maintenance that goes and that the EV is back up and running very quickly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there is a classic cultural piece, a kind of joke about a certain fast food retailer's machines constantly being out of order, right? I think we all probably know who we're talking about here. It is a bit of a joke because actually that machine is worse than useless if it's not running, and if your customers can't use it, it's actually more of a hindrance than a help. So I guess I would love to know what the dialogue looks like there for you. I mean, are you constantly in communication with Mer? Are you constantly, you know, if there is a problem, is it easy to come and get that sorted out? And as you say, that there was, did you say kind of 97% uptime or something average, which is pretty impressive, a lot more impressive than the machines I'm talking about in the fast food joints, probably, I think. But yeah, you know, what does that look like? Because inevitably, some things will every now and again go wrong with literally anything with moving parts, right? So how have you found that?
Yeah, so we sort of run two sides to this. One is we offer up a back office system for our partners. So like Chantel have a back office system to see all the charges that are sort of within their remit. We also have our own team that monitor that as well. So we will then be notified when there is an issue with the system, and then we'll start to put the provisions in place to get that repaired. Often, as we know with laptops, normally switching off, switching on again, typically fixes the problem because there's lots of different, there's I guess three major components in there that are separate from each other. And that is the PATA terminal to allow you to use your contactless card. There is the modem that's running off of a SIM card. And then you've actually got the charger itself. And at times one of those communications bumps against the other, and sometimes just simply resetting the charger, which we can do remotely. We can actually do it on the phone whilst the customer's at the charger. We have all the charger ID is on the front with a telephone number. They can phone us or they can message us through the app, and our team can then look at it live and say, yeah, we can actually see what that issue is, reset the charger, and even start the driver's charge whilst they're there for them remotely. Because again, for us as Mayor, this isn't obviously the way in which we do it. We're funding that installation, but it's not so much about the hardware. We're picking the hardware that works for us. For us, it's about being the network. So an easy way to put that in context is a bit like, we don't mind what mobile phone that you have, but we want to be your mobile phone provider. Mm-hmm. That's the important thing. But to be a good provider, you need to have a good handset. In this case, you need to have a good charger. Mm-hmm. And we need to have that back-to-back with our partners in that we're buying the hardware from. And that's really important. And that's something that Chantel and I went into quite a lot of detail in when we were doing the tender process.
Yeah, and this may be an interesting question for you, Tim, as well then. We talked about, I mean, yeah, that software is obviously extremely complex. You say there's three different elements in there that make up even the basics of, you know, that the system needs to even work. And that front end experience, when you're EV charging, obviously you don't want to know about all of the bells and whistles and gears and things moving inside. All you want is to plug something in, tap a screen a couple of times probably, and then walk away and have a coffee, right?
Yes.
So what goes into making sure that that front end experience is really good? And it's, you know, I'm really interested in your perspective because you're an EV driver.
Yeah, absolutely. And have been for a while. So I'm just going to throw that in. That is actually the key. And I think the key for us, I'm looking at Liz, is that how is the experience for our drivers? And the way in which we do that is we do a lot of research into the hardware. So we spend a lot of time with the contactless card payment provider and seeing what new software they've got coming out, the firmware that they're running, the physical hardware, has it changed? And again, the same with our partners for the physical hardware, the actual charger that goes in the ground. What I think is really important here to understand, certainly what from our perspective as Mayor, so we are across Europe. So you'll notice that we're based in Norway, Sweden, Germany, Austria, and also here in the UK. Our partners over in Norway and Germany are actually starting to trial what we're trying to bring to the UK, which is known as plug and charge. If there's any Tesla drivers, they'll be very used to this because the Tesla is a closed network. You simply plug your car in, the charge starts. It takes the payment when you finish from the card that you register at the beginning. It is a really seamless system. And that is what the EV charging industry is trying to move towards. Now, we've successfully implemented that in Germany on a small trial. But again, this comes down to not just us as mayor. We would love to roll this out, as I'm sure a lot of CPOs would do the same. This also, we need the backing of the hardware providers, which is very much there. But then also from the actual car manufacturers themselves. They need to be able to release some of that information. Effectively, what is happening is the charger can then identify the car by its chassis number, knows who the owner is, goes back, takes payment. So that's quite a lot of software that needs to happen. So just to give a bit of context in terms of how dedicated we are to trying to create that, exactly as you say, you want it to be seamless. We understand that as a driver. I understand that as a driver. Mm. There's nothing more frustrating when it just won't switch on, it won't do these things. But again, that it goes back to what I mentioned earlier. There's then a phone number that you can ring and say, listen, I'm at your charger, it's not working, can you help me? And I think that's something that we as mayor focus on quite strongly, because we do understand, interesting that you bring it up, that there's a lot of stigma in this industry that, okay, there might be a charger, but does that charger work? And this is why for us, we're down to simply two pieces of hardware that we put in, because they're the only ones that will meet what we're looking to achieve. And that's through a lot of testing through the multiple business units across Europe. We've installed a lot of different hardware across all of those. We've really boiled it down to go, okay, what gives us the best communication? Who comes back to us the best? And it's really important to make sure that front-end experience works for our customers. But in short, they can access the charger via an RFID card. So you can contact us, we'll send them one. And that can be a key ring that you can simply put on your car keys, nice and easy. It's probably the easiest way to access the charger. You can do it via our app. You can do it via a contactless card, so you can turn up with a credit or a debit card, or you can use multiple what we call intermediary platforms, so stuff like ZapPay or Octopus Electric Universe. You can use those too, because we try and partner with all of them, because again, accessibility to the charger is key.
Yeah, so you know, whatever is your habit, you can just do that.
Yes.
And it just be an easy process, and yeah, you know exactly what you're doing. That's brilliant. Yeah. For someone who lives in London, I have never been on one of the city bikes, which is absurd, because I am nervous in public to go up and try and work out what I'm doing. Do you know what I mean? Yes. Stand there yanking at a bike handle, trying to get it out. And it's like there is a certain confidence with just knowing what you're doing and it just being part of your routine, isn't there?
Yeah, and that's a really good point, actually. We ran this as an exercise. In fact, Liz and I spoke about it, and there's just, I can't even think what started it, but I ended up going to a site and got chatting with a lot of drivers. And that was such a key thing, that people were going, I can't get it going. How do I do this? And I'm like, oh, here, come do this. And then we actually started running days. So we brought the team. It's Liz's initiative. And actually, we're going this week up to one of our sites near Birmingham as a team to go and just interact with drivers and say, look, this is, it's really, it's not as scary as it seems. And you'll be surprised when you go, I've gone to sites when they've just come live, and you'll see people who don't even drive an EV. They'll walk over to them because it's the first time they've got to go and touch and feel a charger and be like, so how does this work? And what does this connector do? And what does that mean? And they suddenly, it's almost this eureka moment that actually this is quite easy. This isn't as difficult as it seems. It doesn't take a million years to charge. I'm not going to be able to, you know, I'm not going to get stuck. You always hear these, you always get the worst stories. Oh, it took me 24 hours to drive 100 miles or something crazy. But you think that's, as I say, I've been driving a car, an EV, all the time I've worked here and before. So maybe 6 years. And I've not once run out of energy, had a bad charging experience. I've had one that's been broken, had to move to another one. That has happened. But it's really nowhere near as painful as you would expect it to be. Mm. You know, and this includes doing some, I live down south, driving up to Leeds to see colleagues, you know, sort of 300 mile one way trip. It's actually quite a smooth transition, and it's a lot easier than you think.
Mm-hmm. And it plays into something that we talk so much about at the moment, which is kind of experiential retail in a way, because like you say, actually, I hadn't considered the fact that that may have a massive impact on buying habits, as in, you know, you can order online, but actually why not go in and maybe speak to an expert? Anything we can do to give people a opportunity to get back into brick and mortar and to, you know, utilize this fantastic resource that's there. And also for retailers to realize the benefit of being located so close to an electric charger. There's a symbiosis there, isn't there, which kind of comes to the fore, I think, a bit more as a result of EV charging than maybe was there before?
I think so. I think we've talked about what is ESG behind EV. And of course, there's the E of reducing fossil fuel. And then there's air pollution that Liz talked about. And then there's the S, there's the impact on health and having a better air quality, but also the connection and people wanting to travel and purchase in person and create these human connections, which are so crucial in our day and age of online presence. And and then the E, which is the income. And so making sense of it all through that ESG just makes sense, which is
absolutely
great.
Fantastic. I want to ask a little bit more of a hard question, because I think it is really important that we talk about it. And Liz, I think this might be one that I would love to hear your perspective on. The eyebrows went up there. I promise you it's nothing too stressful. But I do want to talk about legislation and the fact that, you know, there is, as you mentioned right up front of the podcast, there is legislation coming around low emissions and fleet electrification that is accelerating at a really fast rate now, because people fundamentally want the footprint of their organization to go down. And, you know, I mean, are there even kind of cars that are, you know, being given out corporately or leased corporately at the moment, which aren't electric? I feel like every company I see, they want to, you know, lower their environmental footprint by making sure that they're using electric and using it well. So I want to talk a little bit more about that urgency to act, which, again, we alluded to at the beginning. So what are the downsides of not utilising this as a really good opportunity to get on board?
Wow, that's an enormous question, and actually one quite close to my heart. I've worked in renewables for quite a long time for a reason, right? I'm passionately believe that we should be working towards a better environment for all. So not wanting to be overly dramatic here, but the downside of not putting this infrastructure in place, making this transition easier, is exactly as Chantal just said, it's air pollution at a local level. It's your children walking to school down your local high street breathing in fumes. And I think if you put it in that context, it is very dramatic. You know, yes, we're putting in infrastructure in retail parks. We bring in revenue. It meets the ESG credentials of the retail park. But when you bring it right back down to what is it? Why are we doing this? For me personally, that's why we're doing this. Because if you push that pollution back to almost the source, so in this case the energy generators, then you can handle it, you can install, you can build renewable, you can build solar, wind, which is what our parent company does, which is why we've got that sort of supply chain of renewable energy, and that's what we should all be working towards. And it's been a rocky ride. We've seen a lot of change in regulation. We've seen, you know, regulation push back, come forward. Ultimately, we can see everything that's going on in the world in terms of climate change. And we need to get on it now. Time is really running out. We do have mandates in the UK to ban the sale of ICE vehicles and eventually FEV as well. We do have targets and we want to meet them, right? Because this is the transition to EV is probably the most accessible, reliable way of greening up our biggest emissions driver in the UK. And I just, yeah, it's a tough question. It is a really tough question, isn't it? Because it's quite emotive. You don't want to be too dramatic. But I feel like we probably are at a point now where actually being quite dramatic about this is what's needed, because we take our eye off the game a little bit and we could be in a seriously large amount of trouble.
Yeah. And of course, there's the moral imperative, but also often you have to choose as a business between what is right and what is most cost effective for you as a business. And of course, there has to be some balance there. You know, you can't do anything if you're out of business, you know, because you're not making enough money or you're spending too much money. So there has to be a balance in there. And it's rare that the two things can actually correlate really nicely, and you can do something that is going to really benefit you, you know, as a business and financially, but that also has a really strong moral imperative to it, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree. And you know, we have got a lot of backing from government, realistically. I know it's been a bit up and down. There has been a lot of back and forth with the government, and now's the time to look solely to the future. Where do we want to get to, and how are we going to get there? We've got the mandate. We know we've got to green up transportation. This is the best way of doing it. And as you said, it will bring you in income. It will bring you in footfall. I'm an EV driver. I go to retail parks to normally get something. I go there because I want to go there to get something. Since having the EV, I go to retail parks because I'm also charging my car. And then you get my incidental spend as well. And that I can't be alone in this. Most dramatically, I may have accidentally bought a kitchen last time we did it. I've been trying to buy a kitchen for 5 years, but I now have a kitchen. It's coming next week. But that's because I was charging on site and I thought, oh, I'll just go and have a look around this kitchen spot. It's not just me. There's a whole world of people who do this. And, you know, you guys in the retail sector know this. You know us better, I think, than we know ourselves. Mm-hmm. But this is just another way of bringing people in and using their time efficiently.
Fantastic. And so let's talk about, Chantal, your perspective here then, because the other side of that is the retailer perspective. It's hugely beneficial to them. It makes sense for kind of, there are three key partners here, right? One of which is obviously the EV solutions provider. One is you as the landlord, and the other is the tenant, the retailer. So what have you heard from your retailers? What's been their perspective? And also, what kind of questions are coming up? What are they asking you about EV charging?
Before we implement a site, we communicate to our tenants to let them know about the plans. And the questions that we get asked are things like, what is going to be the impact on during construction and implementation of the charging bays? As well, in terms of, we see a mixed reaction. Some retailers are now actually asking for it at renewal. We have some big retail brands now asking as a requirement to put in EV. And then some are quite apprehensive. And I would say those are the ones that have perhaps less experience with the EV and are genuinely just afraid of the impact on the fuel driving cars and the parking spaces. So with areas where we have large parking spaces and lots of capacity, have no issue. And then those that have smaller capacity and lots of current footfall are apprehensive about the impact of EV. So those are the relationships that we have to manage. So this is where the discussions happen, where we either reduce the number of bays or reposition them.
Mm-hmm. And there's also a really important element here for you as a landlord, that this is a differentiator. You are doing something that these retailers can shout about, especially if they themselves are like very vocal about their environmental footprint. As you say, people are asking for it. For some people, it's a non-negotiable that, you know, I can imagine so many brands come to mind who I know really care about that and want to know that they are open and accessible for those who are utilizing electric vehicles. So can you tell us a bit about that? I mean, are you finding that that is a real differentiator for you as a landlord?
I think once we have those EV in place, it's going to be a differentiator, i.e. brands will then be able to know it's already there, it's working well, and we can come and trust it. I think the complexity is adding to existing sites, and nobody likes change, you know, so it's it's almost because what we're finding is different tenancy agreements that have restrictions on build zone. Well, the no build zone was actually thought of to not have an actual structure, building structure coming in front of their store. But these complexity of legalities and consent is what is causing the delays. However, once we come up over those hurdles, that after that implementation and the EVs are there, that's when it will become a differentiator as tenancy get renewed and new tenants come in.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm really sorry to say we're very nearly out of time, but I want to ask all three of you a question. I'm interested in kind of what your responses, you know, your respective responses will be from your positions. So it's the big question, really, the kind of the classic, you know, conclusion question, which is, where's all this going? What does the future vision for EV infrastructure in retail and mixed use developments, what does it look like to you? And where are we on that timeline as far as you're concerned? So maybe, you know, from a Knight Frank perspective, I'd be interested to hear.
Yeah, I'll let Liz start.
Okay. I can't get my thoughts in. I was like, oh, good. Yeah, you start. Go on.
I think we're at a point where we're still very early days. I think this is going to become a key feature in retail parks. It's going to be something we're going to get used to seeing, I believe. The biggest challenge in EV right now isn't so much, you know, what speed should we do, what everything else. It's people without off-street parking. Where do they go? The retail space is perfect for them. You've got fast food restaurants, you've got your coffee shops, you've got convenience stores. If we can match that with high power charging, so on your route home when you're picking up the bits that you need for your dinner or whatever it might be, you can charge your car and then go and park outside your house, then that's a great solution. I believe it's going to become something we're going to see all the time in retail parks. And I think we're early days. And as Chantal was sort of mentioning, you know, the complexities of getting these in is always far greater than people believe. You know, it's just a charger in the ground. What could be so hard? But you'll be surprised, both legally and physically, how challenging it is to get these in. And so I still think we're early days. I think we're starting to see what the future is going to look like. But I think there's still a decent way to go yet.
Follow on from Tim's comments and to just bring back the statistic from the very beginning, 30 million ICE vehicles on the road, of which only 1.5 are BEVs. So that in itself tells us how early we are in this transition. If you go to a retail park now, you do see a lot of EVs because I'm an EV nerd, so I see a lot of EVs. Mm-hmm. But it's not all EV. We see a very different world. If you look over to Norway, where they've had a serious transition to EV and they're a few years ahead of us, once we've made that jump, you're going to see a significant number of people looking for places to charge. As Tim said, lots of people that don't have off-street charging, difficult to solve that. There are ways of solving that. But realistically, you want the easiest, the quickest, the most convenient for you. Something that you go to, you get something from, and that's where the retail park comes into this. And I think it will become something that a retail park needs to have, as Chantel was alluding to. You need to have this. This is what is expected within your retail location.
Just to echo, I think a future of EV is where we need and must be and should go. In terms of the role of EV in a retail park, it just goes hand in hand. When you think about a parking that just sits there and a car that sits there without even being useful during that dwell time, and transforming that in income and eliminating fossil fuel, if we're moving towards a world where we're eliminating the use of fossil fuel, then the EV is the kind of future that we need to build towards and get ready for.
Fantastic. I mean, it just, everything that we've said today, everything that we've talked about collectively, it does just sound like now is such an opportune time to kind of get in at the right time, to start making yourself a destination, but also so that when EVs are everywhere and EV charging is everywhere, that habit is already cemented in the minds of your customers that, you know, they're going to come to you. They're going to, you know, come to your location, and they know that actually that's going to be a few minutes of reprieve from, you know, life. And the fact that it can actually really, as mentioned, change your buying habits as a consumer as well. It's just the kind of the icing on the cake, isn't it? So it's been such a pleasure to speak to all three of you. Thank you so much for your time. And thank you to our listeners as well. Thank you.